Welcome to the AquariMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 142, recorded December 10th, 2012.
Okay. Greetings, AquariMaxers.
Hello, once again.
Yes, we're going to try this. We just lost several minutes of recording because of the way the microphone was set up. So we just fixed it. So now, please tell us who's joining us today.
Take two.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. We have a Gregory from Facebook, who is a new contributor.
Welcome, Gregory.
And I'm sure he does not literally live in Facebook, but I don't know where he's from. So for our purposes, he's from Facebook.
Gregory from Facebook for now. Okay.
And Andreka in Oregon, and Mick in Carnforth.
Okay. Carnforth. UK?
What other Carnforth is there?
I don't know.
Every time I hear somebody say Carnforth, I think that's in the UK.
Well, so do I, but see, we're you know, there may be folks who don't know that. All right.
Okay.
New
We love Carnforth. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, yes. That's good. Yes, Kay. So let's start out.
Okay, we're going to go with Gregory first. He says, I bred my betta on November 20th and removed the male 3 days later when the fry were free swimming and in the process netted some of the duckweed and the fry. After putting the male in his tank and dunking the net in his tank a few times to get the fry out, I scraped the duckweed out of the net and put it in my 5-gallon planted shrimp and otto tank. Today, I was looking in at the tank and what did I see swim across the back of the tank? A single baby betta that was twice the size of any of the other fry I have at the moment. I just thought it was interesting because I have never once put any food in there for a baby betta. I know it's been living off of the infusoria and the baby red cherry shrimp. I'll post a picture when I can.
I love this.
This is very funny.
It is. Partly because Gregory's, of course, right that it's, you know, feeding on baby shrimp and infusoria and the things that it finds in there. And he hasn't put food in there specifically for the betta, but that fish is not competing with any other fish for food, conceivably with the shrimp, but not with other fish. And it's also got a planted tank by itself, so the water quality is likely to be good. Possible hormones that are growth inhibiting that other fish could be releasing in the other tank, not doing it in this tank.
Okay, back up and explain that. Okay. The growth inhibiting hormones.
A lot of people believe that fish generally produce hormones that can inhibit growth, and there are...
The point of that being?
Well, the evidence shows that when you keep a lot of fish together, what's going on is you notice, you know, if you keep a whole bunch of bettas together in a tank, they don't grow nearly as fast as if you separate all of those bettas into separate tanks. And there are various reasons for that. One of them is competition for food and so on. But
so
that doesn't seem to be enough
to... Their own selves trying to... exercise some crowd control?
Possibly, yeah. Okay. In a small, you know, environment. In a larger environment, it probably doesn't have that much of an effect. But in a smaller environment, tends to reduce their size. But as soon as they get into a more favorable environment, then they'll shoot up. Just like we noticed spawning the betas this last time, recently, I should say, when we put them in separate containers, where we change the water every day, and there's only one fish, and they're not competing for food, and there aren't, you know, other things in the water the other fish are releasing, they grow faster. So there are many reasons that happens, but it's funny to see. Part of the reason why I think it's funny is because, you know, if you're breeding Dalmatians, you don't say, oh, look, I just found another Dalmatian puppy in the bathtub. But with fish...
Aren't we glad?
Yes, but with fish, you get surprised. Mm-hmm. You know, with things like this, it's kind of fun. There are lots of opportunities to be surprised in interesting ways like that. So, thank you for sharing the story, Gregory. It's fun.
Okay, let's go to Mick.
Okay. What has he got to
say? He says, the creepy crawly Cory Chronicles have come to a critical conclusion.
Wow, he definitely won this time.
Yeah, he totally won the Aquarimax Alliteration Award.
Yes.
That's pretty
awesome.
Hands
down.
How many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven!
Wow.
Seven with one blow!
He won the awesome AquariMax Alliteration Award.
Yes. Okay. It is with sad news that I announce my Corys lost their battle against the infection. After many weeks of treatments, I seemed to finally get the better of the parasite, and then a devastating outbreak of white spot took hold. I think that their immune systems were depleted from the long battle with white and wiggly things.
Sounds likely.
That's sad.
That's sad. Our condolences.
Yeah. So after a week of treating the white spot and the Corys beginning to become lethargic and thin, I took the sad step to euthanize them. I used just enough water to cover them and then add around a pint of carbonated water. This seems to do the trick in a very short order, but I was wondering if you had any other suggestions. I know a friend who uses clove oil and then an ammonia dip. I have hardly ever had to end the life of a fish and always like to think I can be as humane as possible.
Well, this is quite a topic.
Yeah, that's a sad...
It's a sad topic, but it is a necessary thing to address on occasion. I've had to euthanize some rainbow fish and some CPDs in fairly recent history. And yeah, one of our
goldfish. Not recently goldfish,
but yeah. Once in a while it happens, and it is controversial because there's a lot of people who say, well, this method is more humane than this method, and so on. So... It's kind of hard to establish that because we've never actually been able to interview a fish post-mortem.
Well,
we don't even have much luck interviewing them pre-mortem either. But there are some methods we can discuss anyway, and possibilities there. One thing is that clove oil is a fairly commonly used one.
We've used that before,
yes,
right?
Yes, and it does take some fairly high doses to work properly. But it does seem to kind of euthanize them in a fairly humane way. They just sort of go to sleep and then they stop breathing and then that's
so they're
the
not
that.
Struggling or in pain.
Right, they slow down. You see them just, you know, their breathing slows and their swimming slows and it just seems sort of gradual but not traumatic. But one issue, and this is an article that we're going to put that we found on Fish Channel about euthanasia in fish. We're going to post this on the show page. Discusses the fact that clove oil may have some carcinogens in it. So dealing with it might
be... You mean for the handler?
Yeah. Yeah.
So would... I'm assuming that this is so concentrated that just cooking with cloves is not...
It's probably a much, much higher dose you'd get from clove oil than what you'd... cooking with a little cloves. Probably not anything near the same. You know, there are lots of foods that are, you know, you have potential carcinogens in them, I guess, but we don't eat very much of
them,
so
amount.
It's okay. Or something like that. So, yeah. So I don't think, you know, culinary doses are going to be a big problem. But the doses required here for fish may be
quite a bit higher.
So that's something to look into, but I have used it with success. Another method is freezing. And this method, in the article, it advocates doing it this way. You get a fish in a container, like a bag, fish bag of water, and then you put that into a container full of ice. So the fish is not exposed to, you know, ice cubes. Can't touch them or anything. It's just surrounded by them. Kind of like the ice cream freezer method. And then the temperature quickly drops in that container until the fish dies. And, you know, some people have said, well, that method is inhumane. So, you know, I have used that method on occasion. It's been quite a while since I've used that method, but I have. And then this article talked about CO2 as well.
It sounds like that's similar to what Mick did this time. He said he added carbonated water.
Yes, Mick added the carbonated water, and this article discusses that method, adding the carbonated water, as well as a different method. And so, according to this article, it says the best method is to use CO2 as to bubble vigorously some CO2 from a pressurized container into the water for 30-plus seconds, and then that should...
And they just, you know, not, there's just not enough oxygen,
CO2,
they just can't breathe.
Right.
That seems like it would be less humane because they're like gasping for breath. I would rather just fall asleep.
Well, they lose consciousness pretty quickly. And they seem to have done that in Mick's case too. Now, the article says that using carbonated water is not a method that is advocated by the author of the article. But it seems like in Mick's case it's working pretty effectively. To me, it seems like that, but... know, I'm not an expert on euthanasia, of course, but that's just kind of what I see there. But here, this is a thought experiment I had. I haven't tried this particular method, but I'm going to just talk about it for a minute. Okay. What if you were to get some dry ice and put it in a jar into which you have drilled a hole and placed tubing, like aquarium tubing, air tubing, and then put that tubing into the container where the fish is? If you were to do that, the dry ice would pressurize inside the container enough so that it would start bubbling out into the container. So you could probably get some pretty vigorous bubbling going. And it seems like that might be a way to do it. Because if you don't have a pressurized CO2 container, like a paintball canister or something like that, for a
CO2 injection
system, that might be a pretty easy way to do it. Because you can go get a couple of pounds of dry ice for a couple of dollars at the
grocery store.
I don't know how available CO2 is in other areas of the world, but at least here it's very easy to get. And that would be seemingly a simple way to do it. So I'm wondering if anybody's ever tried that.
I don't know.
But yeah, a couple of ways to do it.
Now, was it the Bag Buddies? Do they use clove oil?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're going to use it, you just up the dosage. Just
increase the dose several times the recommended dose for just keeping fish calm while shipping. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I've done with them on occasion. So those are some ideas. Please check out the link there on euthanasia in fish from fishchannel.com, and that may be helpful.
Okay, Mick also had a comment about the last podcast. He says, I enjoyed the last show and was struck by your mentioning aquaponics, as I have just put a few cuttings of watercress in my planted paludarium to act as both decoration and added filtration. I was at first thinking we could use it as part of our tortoise and bearded dragon foods, but with the firebelly toads in there, I'm not too sure if the toxins in their skins might have an effect on the watercress. Any idea? Oh, he's got one more thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
He says, new job in the fish depot is going really well, looking at ways we can improve the general housekeeping of the tanks and introduce some new livestock lines. So he got the job!
Yeah.
Yay!
Well, he had mentioned that earlier.
Probably, but I have been a basket case the last few months. They don't know that.
Kelly's been involved in a very big production she was directing, and that has sapped a lot of her energy. And so,
but now it's done.
Now
it was
on
Friday, so now it's all done.
Yeah, and she did a very good job. But, he had mentioned that he got the job, and that we...
Congratulations,
and you may
Mick.
Remember that he mentioned that he was talking about his connection to us that may have helped with that.
Okay, I think I remember that now.
Yeah. So, I'm glad that's going well, and my first thought about the watercress would be the same as yours, Mick. The toxins in the skins of the firebelly toads just might have an effect, so it's probably safer not to try. Just my 2 cents there. I agree with you. And, okay. Oh, we wanted to thank Mick, too. He sent a copy of Practical Fish Keeping Magazine, as well as a program from Aquatics Live.
Yeah, that was
neat. We've been enjoying that. I've been perusing the Practical Fish Keeping Magazine. It's a great magazine. For those of you who might not know, it's a UK-based aquarium magazine, and it's a great one. They have a good online presence, too. So if you go to practicalfishkeeping.co.uk, I believe the URL is, you can check that out. They have some of their articles on there.
That's good.
So, yeah, that's been a lot of fun. Thank you again, Mick, for sending those.
Just go to the fish convention sometime as an excuse to go to the UK.
Oh, I know.
Okay, let's go ahead and take our break now.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. Now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nine.
Okay, Andreka in Oregon has sent us on Facebook, she sent us a link to an aquaponics tank.
Right. We had talked about aquaponics, as we mentioned, that Mick was responding about that too, and this was Andreka's response to it. She found a couple of guys who are... we made a Kickstarter project. It's an aquaponics tank, a 3-gallon tank, that's a like a countertop system to do aquaponics in your house. Mm-hmm. And so she sent it to us, the link to it, and the link contains some photos, an explanation, and a small video, short video, about this system. So she was wondering what we thought about it, and here is what I've been able to gather. First of all, I can't completely say everything about the system by what I saw, because I, you know, the video doesn't give you...
You haven't used it.
Everything you need to know to be exhaustive on all the specs and everything. But I was able to gather some things, and I'll just talk about that a little bit. Okay. Well, the website does indicate that it's 3 gallons, that the photo, or the video rather, shows that the way the water moves in the system up to the plants and back down is that there's an airlift. The idea that you have a tubing, some tubing in the water, with a smaller bore tubing inside it, and the smaller bore tubing releases bubbles of air. Those bubbles of air draw water up through the thicker tubing. Basically like an undergravel filter style thing would work. But it draws it up. There isn't an undergravel filter in this, though. It draws the water up to the tray, and then you plant the plants in the tray, and then the water trickles back out from another part of the tank down into the fish area again.
Mm-hmm.
And the plants are in pots with rocks or some kind of rock-like material in there. It may be lightweight expanded clay aggregate or something.
I don't know if you can say lightweight expanded clay aggregate on the air.
Can
or
I
not.
Say LECA?
No, that's, I think that's worse.
That's what they use to refer to it sometimes.
See, okay. that must be why you cannot say it.
Okay. Well, a couple things I wasn't able to determine, and that by just watching the video and looking at the website, is whether the flow of water goes into the tops of the pots and then trickles down through the substrate mm-hmm. in the pots, or if it just goes into the tray beneath, but I rather suspect it's going into the tray beneath. And I wasn't able to determine whether the flow is constant or intermittent. And those are both fairly important things. But I kind of suspect that the flow is constant, just based on the appearance of the setup and the types of plants they suggest. Because intermittent flow in an aquaponic system has great advantages that allow a greater variety of plants to be kept, as well as you can actually keep composting worms in the substrate if you have intermittent flow, which improves the stability of the system and the nutrients available to the plants and so on. But the idea is a lot of plants that you can grow in a garden can't stand having their roots underwater all the time. Some of them can. Some greens, for example, can totally do fine that way. Their roots in water all the time. But a lot of them can't, and do much better if it's just flooded and drained periodically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a vast variety of plants you can grow in that way. Most of the plants that they suggested in the video were plants that can handle their roots being underwater. So,
like all the time?
At least partly underwater all the time.
So that seems to indicate that it's constant.
Right, seems to. I could be wrong about that, but it looked like only a small amount of the plant's roots at the bottom were underwater all the time, and they were going to have roots in the air. The basic idea is that oxygen becomes a limiting factor when you have roots under the water.
Because they're not getting as much.
They're not getting as much oxygen. So that's why it severely limits the types of plants you can grow. But there's still a lot you can grow. Like I said, greens, so a lot of herbs will work, and there are others that will work as well. So
plenty that people usually want to grow in the kitchen anyways.
Right, things that you would grow in the kitchen that would work well in the kitchen is just fine. They mentioned mint as one, basil, things like that.
Basil is beautiful.
Yeah. And so there's some cool things about it. 3 gallons, now that does limit the types of fish you could keep in there. Some of the fish that they suggested were bettas, and I think, you can have one betta do well in 3 gallons. They also suggested white clouds. You could have a few white clouds in there, and that wouldn't be bad. But they also mentioned the possibility of one 3-inch fish, going by the inch per gallon rule, which, as we know, is somewhat of an oversimplification, doesn't always work. And I would be hard-pressed to suggest a 3-inch fish that would be happy, whatever I'm trying to say.
In a
3-gallon tank. There aren't very many. I can't think of any, in fact. So, but if you just had a betta, I think that would be fine. There are a few white clouds that you could do well with a system like this. As long as for the betta, you know, the water would have to be kept warm enough and so on. But it looks like a really cool way to introduce aquaponics to people. So I really like the idea of the setup and would be intrigued to find out more about it.
It's great. People are starting to make it more available.
Right. And it reminds me of the setup. Now, speaking of setups, we're supposed to talk about our setups.
Oh, setups.
And we have a setup. I'm going to talk about my aquaponics semi-hybrid system that I have at work right now.
Semi-hybrid.
Yeah. I've got, it's about a 4.5 gallon tank. And it's a dividable one. It has several dividers in it. Right now, it's got 3 beds in it. And a pothos plant. Several cuttings of pothos plants, in fact. And the roots are running rampant in there. And I've modified the filter a little bit so that it's a small hang on the back, like an Azu palm filter, I think is the brand. And I've modified it so that it has 2 siphons coming out of it all the time to opposite ends of the tank, so that all of the tank, the whole tank, is getting circulation. Because of the dividers would severely limit the amount of circulation going through all sections of the tank. Mm-hmm. But these 2 siphons from the filter go into different corners of the tank, so there's always circulation through the tank. And then I've got the pothos.
You're pretty smart. Can you say that?
And a few other cuttings in there. There's some creeping fig and some lucky bamboo and so on growing in there. And I custom built the lid out of egg crate and some plexiglass sort of material, and so that will, everything will fit. And it's really interesting because the pothos is thriving. It's growing like crazy. It's roots everywhere. Leaves are going nuts. They're looking really bright and green.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those plants whose roots can survive being underwater indefinitely as long as there's lots of stem and leaf structure above the water. So it's doing well there. I think, in fact, it's not getting quite enough nutrients from the bettas because I have had to supplement it. At first, it wasn't doing that well, and its leaves were quite small. And then I began adding more fertilizers to the water, and they were doing better. We're getting bigger leaves and greener leaves and so on. So now it's doing really well. But I'm thinking...
It looks really pretty in your tank. Every time I go into your office, I think, oh, I like that.
I do like it. The only thing is, I think the bettas aren't really enough to keep it going. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying, because I have to add fertilizers to it. And I'm sure the nitrates are really low in there.
Need some messy snails or something.
But I was thinking, well, snails can be a problem in aquaponics for various reasons.
Oh,
but
okay.
I was thinking it would be great with a goldfish tank in like a 55-gallon and have it grow up the wall in a living room or something.
That would be.
So maybe eventually we'll have to do that. Something
sorry,
like that.
That would be neat.
And maybe, you know, try something like that. But anyway, that's sort of the profile. That's the only livestock in there. Are the 3 bettas, and I don't think they're enough biomass. They're not producing enough waste
for the plants
to be completely happy.
Bettas, you're not messy enough.
But they're keeping
go poop more.
They're keeping the water, you know, in fairly good quality for the bettas. And the bettas are building bubble nests like crazy. They love the stems that are emerging from the water.
Well, it's nice where you have it too, because the light comes in and it shows them through the window, and it shows them off very nicely.
So it's kind of fun. 2 baby bettas and our male father.
Who aren't really babies anymore, and we need to get rid of them, I might add, because they're blocking our fireplace, which means we can't decorate for Christmas and hang up our stockings, and it's frustrating. So if anybody wants to buy an Aquaramax betta...
You know what we should just do? If somebody wants an Aquaramax betta, all they have to do is send us the money to ship them, and we can give them a betta free.
It's a Christmas present.
Yeah, there you go.
We can't autograph it, though. The fish wouldn't like it.
But the shipping's
But you could still
steep.
Have it.
Shipping's kind of steep.
The shipping's steep. But
anyway.
We'd autograph a Christmas card for you if you want, and we would say thank you for taking a bait off our hands.
All right. Well, I think that's about it for this week's show.
In fact, what did you say? You could probably ship like 5 or 6 up for
at
approximately
once, for
the same
cost
shipping.
Of shipping
so
one,
so
up to 6.
Take like 6 of them and give them to your kids for Christmas. Because I want to decorate for Christmas.
We all do. But we need to find homes for our little friends. So there you go.
Before it's New Year's.
So in the meantime, may
the
fish be with you.
And the betas.
They're fish too.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquaramax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquaramax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629. or email us at info@aquarimax.com.